Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This show contains adult themes and is not suitable for children.
His relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His dad was a proper gangster.
Yeah.
He bullied him and beat him. Fortunately, he'd had his head blown off by the time I met Bernie on the doorstep.
Right.
With Bernie standing next to him.
I can't tell you why he left the Groucho. It's not for me to say. Suffice to say, Bernie got himself into a dreadful state and felt the only way out was death.
In the last episode, we got a glimpse of Bernie's extraordinary funeral. We heard tributes from close friends who turned out to pay their respects to the little man they knew as the Prince of Soho. We got an inkling of Bernie himself, the energetic host who knew everyone but kept his secrets to himself. We also got a sense of how his life was to unravel and eventually end so tragically in that small flat in North London. We looked at what might have happened to Bernie, his involvement with drugs, and we touched on the pressure he was under when he got on the wrong side of the ruthless gangsters who may have caused his death, either directly or indirectly.
I met them downstairs here wearing canary yellow trousers. Said, if you take him, I take you. And if you want more, because we knew some other friendly Albanians.
Yeah.
And they nearly got to Albania more. And I said, this isn't happening.
10, 15 years after I first met him, I discovered that he had an autistic nephew and that he was deeply involved in his care. And his nephew was quite troubled. He could be violent.
Even Bernie, he never really had off days, but those that knew him, you knew if he was a bit sad. Bernie, you're like, oh, man, a bit of a mare, I won't bore you with it now.
Yeah.
But you would collar him. Come, Bernie, you've helped me out for years, and people wanted to know what's going on. People couldn't fucking rally to his side quickly enough.
It may seem glamorous to be a popular and well-known figure of the kind he was, but in fact there was a lot of work, very little money, and too many temptations into addiction and late nights for either his physical or mental health.
3 years after Bernie's death and the funeral that stopped the traffic in a large chunk of the West End, the downstairs restaurant at the back of the Groucho, named after the club's most famous employee, is still open. The brasserie was renamed Bernie's shortly after his demise. A beautiful portrait of Bernie by the artist Nina Fowler has been placed on one wall. In that picture, Bernie looks strangely ethereal, almost serene. In real life, of course, Bernie never was one to seem ethereal or serene, but the painting does him proud. Bernie had been keeping journalist Kate Spicer and presenter Richard Bacon in check since he started at the Groucho, with varying degrees of success.
Everything was sounded with a kind of alarm, whether it was positive or negative.
He was great, you like that?
I turned up at the Groucho one night with my dog, who is a sizable, shaggy lurcher. And I'd rung Bernie beforehand and said, can I come in with my dog? He's like, yeah, of course. I turned up at reception. I said, oh, Bernie said it was all right to bring the dog in. No, you can't have a dog in here. You can't have a dog in here. I was like, get Bernie, which is a classic line everybody always said, get Bernie. Because Bernie's rules were different from everybody else's rules. Bernie could help bend the rules to whichever shape you wanted them to be. as long as he liked you and he wanted you in the club. And he had done that for me on occasions, you know, and I was not a great friend of his. I am not famous, but once he decided he liked you, he could bend the rules to accommodate you. That's quite magical in this day and age where everything's kind of done by numbers and bureaucratic and boring. So I turn up with my big shaggy lurcher and he comes thundering down the stairs and he looks at me and he goes, "Not that one! That's the size of an horse!" And he basically kicked me out of the club. But in a way, I was quite relieved. The thought of my dog having to sort of pad around all those furiously drinking cokeheads didn't make me feel great anyway. But he did everything with the same extremely high theatrical energy. So when you experienced a fuck off from Bernie, it was slightly different from getting a fuck off from anyone else.
Not only did he, of course, knew our names, but he would know my mum and dad's names and my in-laws' names and my friends' names. And he, even though it was a members club, it had that philosophy that I approach my own life with, which is, you know, there's rules, but they're there to very much be bent and gotten around. And so you could turn up at the Groucho with 20 people unannounced. And I think under the terms of their license, a member's allowed to bring in 3 people. I think that's the law. And I honestly, I've turned up with nearly 20, and Bernie's just gone, yeah, go on, darling, go in.
Bernie brought energy to the Groucho. He mixed people, he introduced people, he greeted shy people as if they were rock stars, and he treated rock stars like they were his cleaners. And everybody loved it. The rules we live by day to day in London, in establishments, didn't apply in the Groucho. Bernie created an alternative universe. And he hooted and squawked and screamed over it, sort of like a kind of giant leopard print eagle. He was always sort of hovering there. And if he wasn't, there was a great sense of disappointment. You know, you'd always find yourself out on the smoking terrace going, "Bernie in." And then someone would go, "No, he's not in tonight." And you'd be like, oh, a little bit sad. Then the minute he approached you, you feel a little bit tired because his energy was just so high.
Somehow, in this room in the Groucho, it feels as if Bernie's spirit is still with us. And for many, like friend and hospitality recruitment director Richie Foster Thorne, he was the Groucho.
The way that I knew Bernie in my mind, and I understood it very, very early on, is that when you work in such a high-profile members' club, and everybody comes in with a degree of ego or a certain belief in their own abilities, but coupled with that, probably some crippling anxieties and some sort of social awkwardness, am I not going to be... When you look at the sort of people in you, actors, they're a funny breed anyway. Writers, artists, continually being pulled apart and dissected and gauged and judged all the time. And I think the whole idea... The only way that I would say, what I learned from Bernie is this: when you are in a group of people, you've got friends there, they've got other friends there, nobody really knows each other, but you are the sort of person that joins them all up. And everybody's feeling a little bit anxious, they know of these people, nobody wants to take the first step forward. Somebody has to fall on their sword, say something daft, and then they all laugh together in unison. As you make your excuses and disappear, they've got a point to talk about. Corey's a hell of a laugh, this bloke, isn't he, as you walk on. So how do you know him? And all of a sudden, it's this organic conversation that started. And it's like magic, and he sprinkles it. And it might take for him to act the fool and fall on his sword in a group of people, or trip up down the stairs, or wear something. In my mind, if somebody's coming into Soho, coming into the Groucho, what do you wear? You judge and look down. You have to dress like that. Trainers were holding him, and jeans were the rest of it. Knowing that Bernie was in there wearing the most outrageous thing you could ever think of and owning it. So if he feels comfortable tripping over down the stairs or eating an orange bar in the bar and spitting the pips at people, then everybody else immediately feels more comfortable.
Sure,
that is what he was a master at, is he was a master at making people feel loved and welcome, and smashing down walls of self anxiety. You know, when you look inwardly, you're sort of continually judging yourself. Didn't have any time for that at all. Not on his watch. In his mind, everybody just have a drink and get on with it. It was a wonderful way to be, and I've never seen anybody do it quite so well. If you look at the spectrum of people that, do you know what, when Bernie taught, everybody listened. And it's not because he was particularly loud, it's because everybody knew how comfortable he made them feel originally. You know, Stephen Fry or Jude Law or any of the unbelievable people, they will always have a very quiet moment for Bernie. He knew me when he was nothing, and he treated me exactly the same. I mean, he backed with us, let's be absolutely clear. If you're an idiot, I remember him legging out to the terrace once, he kicked the door open and he walked past and he'd glide past and he'd do this, he'd do this sort of sideward look. About 10 seconds, I'd be smoking, come back and draw up and he'd be like, right, Reggie, clap his ass, everyone looks like, Reggie, come on, I need you, you old slosher, I need you immediately, come here. He'd say, I'm burning, I'll just come here. And he'd drag you, you know, by this scruff of your neck, you come through. You get into the restroom, you go, what was all that about? What do you mean? He went, nothing, but I don't want you talking to him. He's the dullest bloke ever. I thought I'd save him. Come on, let's go and get a drink. And you think, it was exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
But I would never have told anybody or given anybody in collection. He could see that, you know what, that doesn't match. That bloke and that guy don't go together.
Right,
I'm going to take it apart. Because otherwise everyone's going to have a shit night.
Mm.
And he was, he was a master of that.
In that time, the club changed dramatically, going through a series of incarnations. But Bernie remained at his post throughout until things began to go wrong, horribly wrong. He finally left in the spring of 2017 under a huge cloud, and there's every sign, looking back, that his forced departure from the job he loved was the trigger, the catalyst that would lead to his undoing. Little more than 5 months after Bernie had left the Groucho, he was dead. The club put out a short, terse announcement, but no reason was given. Some suggested a heart attack. By the time he had stepped down, Bernie had clocked up more than 27 years of service. He'd started as a barman in 1990, at a time when the Groucho was at its fashionable, cocaine-fueled zenith. In particular, the upstairs snooker room was widely known as the Peruvian Procurement Department. Again, we should stress, without the knowledge of the management, we do know that Bernie, for reasons of his own, spent a lot of his time up there, and he wasn't that keen on snooker. Bernie himself talked about the snooker room in the book published in 2015 to mark the club's 30th year. It's still the naughty place. There are always people in there using it in the most decadent way. It's definitely the most decadent room in the club. I love the fact that it's still called the snooker room, even though there's no longer a snooker table in there. It's lovely. Every night's party night in there. Somehow the club became a club within a club. It became a private enclave for the club's most unclubbable and degenerate members. Alex James of Blur was one of the noisier people and would often be heard shouting, "I'll take you all on, you posh fuckers!" In 1996, the snooker room was the scene of a public showdown between actress Patsy Kensit and her then-boyfriend Liam Gallagher. Glasses and snooker balls were thrown, and Gallagher ended up trashing not just his own evening, but the table and the room itself. But still, the club survived. PR guru Mark Bukowski joined the club in the early 80s.
I was a very young publicist at the Theatre Royal Stratford East, and the man that who designed all the posters for the theatre told me about this idea of this new type of members club opening. And for me, you know, clubbing, members club, was sort of full of sort of public schoolboys, all now of a certain age, you know, all having to wear ties and jacket and talking about things I wasn't interested in. And so he assured me it wasn't going to be the case. This was something completely fresh and new. And it's true, it was.
The Groucho is the kind of place that is guaranteed to divide opinion. There are those like me who are members and won't have a word said against it. We won't mention the ropey food and overpriced drinks. The Twiglets, at least, are free. Others are less enamoured of it, dismissing it as pretentious and elitist. But isn't that the point of any club, to keep the riffraff out?
The Grats has changed, as all members' clubs have changed. I mean, as the sort of the whole club scene that was originated, the alternative club scene that was originated by the Grouch, everything has changed. Everything's different, everything the same, in the sense that everybody is still getting their kicks in the way they get the kicks, but there's a new morality to it. I mean, it was bacchanalian, you know, in that day. There was certainly, it was presided over by Liam, the manager. There was, you know, there was no closing time. There was no kicking people out when the witching hour came. You know, it's just 24/7. And it was a novelty. And when it's a novelty and a place to be, everybody turns up. And it managed to maintain that novelty over the years until the Soho House came, you know, snapping at its heels and created an alternative. But the Groucho was full of the literary giants. It was full of the music industry, the film industry, the Woolies of the world, and of course, the alternative comedy scene. And of course, all those people at that time were driving to excess. You know, we're all younger and more irresponsible. And when you're younger and irresponsible, you do stuff. But of course, you know, that morality has changed. You know, culture wars now won't allow half the stuff that way it went on. But that's what made it exciting. And it was independently owned, Tony McIntosh and some of the original, you know, managers and people involved with it all sort of cared and protected people. And what happened in the Groucho stayed in the Groucho, you know, until the likes of Toby Young came along to blow the cover and various, because no journalists were ever allowed in, unless they were highly trusted. And of course, as soon as they started to seep in, people were stringing out stories to the diaries.
Set up in the 80s, the Groucho started out as a club for so-called media types. Well, pompous publishers would come here for lunch and to discuss book deals before taking a siesta in their offices after a bottle or two of Burgundy. It was all on the firm, of course. It was around this time that the club started to rent out bedrooms. A colleague of mine at the Daily Telegraph made the most of a small double room with two female publicists. But as the publishers and journos began to die off, cirrhosis is often a killer, the Groucho soon became a discreet and not so discreet celebrity haunt, and Burgundy was not their poison. They, with their hangers-on, were a motley crew, but with plenty of money. One celebrity PR I knew at the time even had her own PR, who presumably in turn had her own PR. But among the wannabes, there were some real stars. Apart from the Gallaghers, the regulars included Kate Moss, Keith Allen, Blur, Tracy Emin, and Damien Hirst. The beauty of the place was that they could behave almost exactly as they liked without fear of ending up in the papers. The irony, of course, was that secretly, a lot of members liked nothing more than to end up in the papers. It was a place for addicts, after all. And apart from anything else, these people were most of all addicted to publicity. Long-standing members like me, who are still standing, well, just about, recall the time in 2002 when Bill Clinton strolled in with Bono. And the pair really did jam together at the piano with Clinton on sax.
Well, I wasn't there that evening. I certainly wasn't there that evening. I know it happened. I know he was there. I think, you know, it certainly was a buzz the following day. I was there the day after he arrived. It was quite late. But of course, Bill Clinton would be there because, you know, as I said, it was Bacchanalian. But I often remember about, you know, there was a big football agent who used to bring all his clients in. There was obviously the literary agents who brought their clients in. Various people were given free memberships to be there. It was when Stephen Fry was a younger man, he propped up the bar. There were theatre producers. There were publicists. There wasn't anywhere else like that. It was unique. But you can only keep that collateral of hype in place if you are unique.
Comedian Helen Lederer has been a member from almost the beginning. She told me that although the Groucho is still regarded in some quarters as being inauthentic or snobby, that couldn't be further from the truth.
And as a member, as I say, I can't remember how many years, but it's probably 25 years of me going, something like that. It's a special place for me. Not the kind of sort of lush, louchy thing that people think. It's a place where you can go on your own as a woman. I would go there. I wouldn't go there on my own and just sit there. I would always go to meet someone. But it was so special. And the people, particularly earlier on, people before it went more corporate, I can just conjure them. The vibe was genuinely exciting for the individual. It was a club that welcomed individuals. You could just go there and function and feel better.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?"
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Paula Yates turning up with Michael Hutchence. Matt LeBlanc from Friends standing alone at the bar one Saturday evening. Wayne Sleep even took Princess Diana there for lunch and famously stiffed her with the bill. The 90s were the Groucho's heyday and Bernie's too. It was the club that everyone wanted to join. And for reasons that have now become clear, everyone wanted to know Bernie. The Groucho had become Cool Britannia's front room. It had been colonised en masse by the new wave of young British artists that included Damien Hirst, Tracy Emin, Sam Taylor Wood and Sarah Lucas. One memorable night in 1995, Hirst put his £20,000 Turner prize money behind the downstairs bar. The next morning, with the party still going, he topped it up with another £20,000 from his own savings. Apart from the YBAs, regulars included television stars and Britpoppers, as we've heard, like Oasis and Blur. Eric Clapton and Bono were both members, and Bernie was in with all of them. Bernie, of course, was in with everyone. The Bernie stories, like the man himself, were vivid, outrageous and lurid. In the 90s, he and the actress Daryl Hannah once undertook a nighttime tour of Soho membership clubs. They shimmied across the rooftops, literally dropping in unannounced on flabbergasted members. Bernie also claims that Jessica Lange taught him to drink tequila and smoke cigars. He was entranced by Hollywood celebrity, but his concern for the welfare of rank-and-file Groucho members also knew no bounds. He personally wheeled home the habitually thirsty journalist Geoffrey Bernard after one heavy night. Bernard had by that point lost one leg to diabetes and was prone to assaulting random passers-by with his walking stick, simply because he didn't like the look of them. Bernie was happy to look after him. Bernie looked after a lot of people. That was his thing. Star of Abigail's Party and latterly Gavin and Stacey, actress Alison Steadman has been a Groucho member for years and knew Bernie well.
Bernie Katz was, to me, he was the Groucho Club. And the Groucho is not the same without him, and it never will be for me. My sadness just doesn't go away. Bernie was fun. He was kind. When he walked in, the room just lit up. I once helped him in a small way to raise money for a charity connected to his nephew. I did very little, but Bernie never forgot it. He knew my favourite tipple and made sure several glasses always appeared. One time, I complained that the Groucho Club didn't offer a Prosecco in the bar. You know, they only sell very, very expensive, ridiculously expensive champagne. And on my next visit, I was greeted with a Prosecco cocktail, several, in fact. He cared about his members and wanted everyone to be happy. He listened. Not everyone does. I loved his style of dress. I've never been able to establish exactly what happened and why, but whatever it was so wrong. Miss you, Bernie.
Helen Lederer also remembers Bernie fondly.
My recollections of Bernie go back many years. I can't imagine him without the leopard skin jacket, but he must have worn other colours. How did I know him? I think he just made himself known to everyone in the early days, and then you felt bonded. Everybody felt that they had a particular special connection with him. I don't know how he did it because there were so many people in that club. And then whenever I'd see him, I'd kind of be like a puppy going, oh, are you going to, oh, I'm here, because we bonded. So he was very colourful. He made a connection with me, along with everyone else. And you just knew you would get his attention and his warmth, and it would make you feel better.
Other moments too became part of the Groucho tapestry. Sometimes Bernie could wildly overstep the mark. He was once interrupted in the snooker room while trying to give a blowjob to one sleeping and non-consenting rock star. It did not go down well, if you excuse the expression, and the member never forgave him. But Bernie, being Bernie, kept his job. Comedian Matt Richardson.
He would always look after me, always made sure I'd eaten and things like that. And he just used to call me his Jewish mum. But the problem with it was he would flip between going, oh, I'm your Jewish mum. I'm like your mum. I'm looking after you. And then he'd be going, oh, let me suck your massive cock, which is quite a confusing image to have about your Jewish mother. But that's what it was. Like, 1 second, Bernie would be saying something really comforting and lovely and making sure I was okay. And then the next minute, he'd be telling me about all the cum he could guzzle. And that was kind of the beauty of him. It was wholesome and filth within a heartbeat. The thing is as well, is when Bernie would kiss you, he would climb you like a koala, and then he would shove his tongue in your mouth, obviously, because he's 5 foot nothing. So I was quite happy, though. Like, if Bernie stopped kissing me like that, I would have been upset about it.
And it wasn't just new members that would get such attention, as Damon Bryant explains.
I remember walking to Groucho once and Bernie goes, Damon, you know how to fit. You're in the film business. You know how to fix a telly, don't you? I've got a problem with a telly in the bedroom. Naivety strikes. So I go up to his bedroom with Bernie. I go, what's telly? Before I could do anything, turn around, taking his hair tie out. He flies his hair across and goes, come on, let me suck your knob. And that was Bernie.
As Bernie became more and more established at the Groucho, his hissy fits, warm-hearted kindness and outrageous campery would invariably pep up all but the most bedraggled and wasted of clubgoers until it was time to go home. It was then that Bernie found himself showing members the door. And according to presenter Pete Donaldson, that was something he was rather good at.
Nothing good ever comes from staying out past 2 a.m. That's what everyone quoted when he died. I remember hearing it slightly differently. He said 2 a.m, but he also used to say nothing good ever came from more than two lines of coke. And, you know, that's just excellent advice generally. They should put that in the manual for life. and that was the weird thing. I could never really place how old he was, but he just seemed incredibly wise beyond his years. He could be 30, he could have been 50. I just didn't really know until he sadly passed. And he was so lovely. lovely with it. The Groucho was always one of those places that I was, I'd always be in on someone else's membership. I wasn't a member myself, so I'd always be just a hanger on. But Bernie, he never differentiated between the two. He never gave a toss about how you got there. He was just lovely to you, no matter what. That was until it got to about 2 a.m. and he wanted his staff to go home. He wanted the Groucho closed effectively. And wow, I mean, he was incredible. He's this tiny 4-foot-odd man who would just clear an entire building of pissed up, just disgruntled idiots. It was fantastic to see. He would have cleared the Capitol building of QAnon in about 5 minutes. I'm fairly certain of that if he was still around. And this is a man who kicked out Madonna from the Groucho for being a prick. when you look at chutzpah in the dictionary, it should say Bernie Katz.
So where did that chutzpah come from? By anyone's standards, Bernie had a colourful family background. His father, Brian Clifford, was a ruthless South London gangster known as Little Legs. Here's Bernie talking to Matt Richardson on his Soho radio show. He didn't spend a lot of time talking about his family, but every now and again, he'd give us a glimpse here and there.
I mean, I left school at 11.
Did you really?
I left school at 11. I went to work. I was busy.
Where'd you work?
I worked for my dad.
Fair enough. What did he do?
Bit of this and a bit of that.
Fair enough. Sounds legit.
Yeah, it's totally legit. I was just really busy. It's like, I can't be doing all this at once. I've got a lot to get through. School, it's just, you know.
Yeah, put that to one side.
Put it to one side, absolutely. They were glad as well. The school was
fair enough.
They were glad. They used to go, I talk through the door. They go, oh, God, he's here. We were hoping he was going to be late. Now, many years ago, I'm talking 1982, my dad had a restaurant in Endell Street. It was called Swans. And before it was Swans, it was a really naughty boys nightclub. Ooh. I mean, it was called the Peacock. And it was a really late night bar. And basically, you had to be a certain kind of man to go in there. You had to be, you know, like...
So showbiz has always been in your...
No, not show business. It's people that are usually behind the scenes in show business. Yeah. Like the ones that are some that appeared in, like, the Godfather type people.
Yeah. The fluffers.
Well, not so much the fluffers. Yeah, the boys with the big gun.
His relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His dad was a proper gangster. He bullied him, beat him,
Did you ever meet his dad?
No. Right. No, fortunately, he'd had his head blown off by the time I'd met Bernie on the doorstep with Bernie standing next to him. Bernie came down, there was a car far from. Guy blows his dad's head off, you know, literally bang. And first thing Bernie does is run upstairs and get his crocodile shoes. That's how much lack of love he had for his dad.
Right, yeah.
That's one of the tough bits because he then took on the mantle of his family and was, you know, for essentially his mum and two sisters, essentially the man of the house. In a funny way, a lot of the pressure came in part of Bernie's demise without being horrible to them, because I love his mum and why the funeral was so important for his mum, but there was a lot of strain coming from the family. He had to pay their rent. He had an autistic cousin, nephew,
who
needed support and help.
Yeah.
And most of his money went, you know, keeping them afloat.
In a memoir, the seasoned psychopath and torturer, Mad Frankie Fraser, described Bernie's father as a mover, a buyer of gear. He was murdered at his home in 1979, probably by a rival gang. No one was ever caught. Bernie, then 15, and his mother, Rhoda, were both present in the house at the time. In Soho Society, the book Bernie published in 2008, he chronicled his father's death with a detached, macabre humour. So used was I to a life of drive-by shootings, I thought nothing of the sound of that gunshot, except that it intruded upon my viewing of The Price is Right. When I went to investigate, I discovered that thanks to the bullet through his head, my dad's brains were splattered across the four walls of his bedroom. Never one to miss an opportunity, I sashayed over to his wardrobe and navigated my way across the sea of footwear to his black Pierre Cardin alligator skin shoes, which I'd secretly always had my eye on. Thank God they were in the wardrobe. You see, something good always comes out of tragedy. Bernie's tragedy, as I discovered, was that after he left the Groucho, with no regular job, he had begun to succumb to the addictions that had dogged him throughout his life. He soon found himself with money troubles, and he ended up taking small loans from friends. Here's Richie Fosterthorne.
He said, what were you talking earlier about? I said, I was just having a chat about a couple of things. He went, fuck off, I know you better than that. He said, how much did you give him? Yeah. I said, come on, Dan. I said, no, I'm asking, how much did you give him? I said, just a couple hundred quid. Mm-hmm. He goes, all right, okay, fair enough. I said, will I get that money back? And he went, no, never. He'd always mean to give it back to you. Yeah. He'd never see that again. Yeah, but he doesn't mean not to. He will always mean to.
And then, from what I have been told, things got much worse. Put bluntly, he got on the wrong side of the wrong type of people. Specifically, it was whispered, Albanian gangsters and their constant demands for repayments. The traffic-blocking turnouts at his funeral procession attested to the many people who counted Bernie as a friend. Yet very few of those friends were fully aware of the pressure he was under. As we have already learned, Bernie's body was found on 31st of August 2017 at his modest rented flat in Kentish Town, North London. The cause of death, according to Dr. William Dolman, the coroner at St. Pancras Coroner's Court, was suspension, a legalistic euphemism for hanging. He recorded an open verdict. Inevitably, rumours flew. Some members blamed the Groucho. Had the management been fair to Bernie after his many years of outstanding service? Was he pushed out? If so, why?
The last time I saw Bernie was a weirdly emotional time. It was his last night at the Groucho when it was kind of his big retirement party. And it had been painted to everyone that he was retiring and that it was his choice and all this kind of stuff. And it was very evident that evening that that wasn't the case. And he was kind of being forced into this decision. So it was really bittersweet. And he wasn't really present at that party. Like, he was there, but he wasn't there. It was a really strange evening. And you could see that he was upset and see that this wasn't how things should be. And, you know, I kept in touch with him after that and kept trying to see him, but he was sort of busy with other things and, you know, in hindsight, probably was trying to avoid people because things weren't so good in his life. So, yeah, it wasn't like I left on a high with him. And I feel like that was a real shame because it was the last time I saw him and it was the first time he wasn't the Bernie of my memory.
Although members gossiped, no hard facts appeared. When Bernie dies, I asked a couple of the club's waitresses if they knew what had happened. My questions drew uneasy, nervous looks. Clearly, they just didn't want to talk about it. Nor did many of Bernie's friends. One well-known media celebrity wrote to me saying that he'd loved Bernie, but conspicuously, he had nothing more to add. Odd that. In fact, I'm not sure Bernie had many real friends. He was a friend to the stars. But how many were genuinely friends to him? Ultimately, he was an outsider, merely a gatekeeper to a gilded, glamorous world. The irony of a restaurant at the Groucho named after Bernie has not been lost on some members. They suggest that the club's management is trying to atone belatedly for the treatment of their legendary employee. As one Irish member put it to me, there's a word in Irish that just about does the job. Naming the restaurant after Bernie was a classic example of plormus. It means empty flattery, ingratiating talk, disingenuous praise. They were blowing smoke up his arse. It was all a bit too late for that. Not one member of Bernie's large family attended the party to launch the restaurant. We asked them, Groucho manager Jeff Conan told me, but they didn't want to come. That was their choice. Stephen Fry, a founder member of the Groucho, was perhaps closer to Bernie than most.
My first impressions were of a huge, vibrant and outgoing personality, all hugs, grins, extravagant language and wild attire. His ability to diffuse any potentially ugly scenes was what most impressed. He was short in stature, but with the heart of a lion when it came to anyone, no matter what their size or how imposing their frame. He claimed to study some sort of martial art, and maybe he did, but it was the confidence with which he approached the drunk, the aggressive and the combative. He could either face them down as one strong man to another, or he would disarm with camp wit and impossible bravura. There probably was something sad about Bernie. It can't have been easy to watch so many people coming in and out, so many of whom seemed to have perfectly prosperous and easy lives, while he was always working late, 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 always at the mercy of whatever structural or managerial changes might come to make his life harder. It may seem glamorous to be a popular and well-known figure of the kind he was, but in fact there was a lot of work, very little money, and too many temptations into addiction and late nights for either his physical or mental health. Was Bernie depressive? I think yes. When alone, a condition he rarely sought, he had demons that flew about his head.
But what exactly were those demons that Stephen Fry talked about? In the end, was he overcome by them? Or was it something or someone else that killed him? His family acknowledged that throughout his life he had suffered mental health issues. Friends also talked of him being done and ready to go by the time he reached the end of his life. But why? And why then? In part three, we'll look at the mystery of Bernie's last few months and why it all went wrong from the very moment he lost his job at the Groucho. In the next episode of Who Killed the Prince of Soho...
He said it was about £9,000, but he got into £20,000 worth of debt with the Albanian gangsters in Soho. I met them downstairs here wearing canary yellow trousers. He said, if you take him, I take you. And if you want more, because we knew some other friendly Albanians...
Yeah.
And they nearly got to Albania more. And I said, this isn't happening, and we're going to pay.
There's a whole load of us put money in just to clear that debt.
Our cover art features photography from Andy Fallon, and he can be found at andyfallon.co.uk. Many thanks to Soho Radio, 5x15, and all our contributors.
Bernie, who killed the Prince of Soho? Is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.